Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast channel. I'm Joanne Smichael, and I'm delighted that you tuned in for relevant leadership learning that will help you continue to soar. Enjoy this episode. This next chapter series has been way more popular than I ever could have imagined. I'm so happy to get the feedback from you guys that you're enjoying the stories of people who have revived, recharged, reinvented, and redirected their lives. Mark Gessner, today's guest, personifies all of those things. He's on his third chapter. Mark is the Maureen and Douglas Cohn Executive Director of the Tampa JCs. JCCs, let me correct myself. It's a new role that he assumed a few months ago. While he's familiar with nonprofits, he spent many, many, many years in academia. Welcome, welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I want to share a little bit about your journey. As I mentioned, I know that you had a wonderful career in academia. You were the Vice President of Community Engagement, Innovation, and Communications at St. Leo University. You served as a business professor and the Executive Director of the Hub for Innovation and Community Engaged Learning at Cardinal Stritch University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And that means you love learning because you hold a bachelor's degree in communication and journalism from SUNY Albany. Excuse me, for those of you who don't know SUNY, it's State University of New York at Albany. You got a master's degree in education from Harvard and your doctorate in leadership for the advancement of learning and service from Cardinal Stritch. But what I know about you is you did not take a linear traditional path to your degree. So will you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Glad to. And thanks for having me on the show and podcast. Yeah, I definitely did not take a linear path. And for education, I started my undergraduate in Albany was just after high school. So that was more traditional, I suppose. But then after that, I took about 6 or 7 years trying to figure out what was next. And a lot of that involved travel and being wandering around the country and then eventually the world. And then I ended up Martha's Vineyard at a youth hostel, which I can come back and tell you about. But that was when I started to pursue my master's in education because I felt like I needed it to learn what I was in the area I was working in and to advance professionally. That was maybe 6 or 7 years after my undergraduate degree. And then it was another 20 years or so until I went and got my doctoral degree. And again, it was really a pragmatic reason initially because it was the direction of my next chapter. So that's a little bit about that path.
That's very interesting. I love the fact that you didn't go undergrad, graduate school, doctorate. I love the fact that you spent time in the world, learning about the world so that your scholarship could be combined with real world practice. I want to talk a little bit about facets of your career beyond academia. I know you've been involved in and are passionate about nonprofit service. I know you co-authored a book. It's a great book, and I'm using it right now in my leadership development work. The title is Your Life is Your Message, Discovering the Core of Transformational Leadership. And your life is your message. So I want to talk about this time you spent in youth hostels at, I think you were at the local, the regional, and the national level with hostels. So yeah. This was your start. Tell us more about that and how it prepared you for the next chapters.
Sure. So I think an important part of this story is in my late 20s, when I had a number of different jobs and was wandering about, I ended up one day in the fall of a year on Martha's Vineyard, which some may know is a beautiful resort island. But I was there at a time when not at the height of the travel season, it was actually much more mellow in the fall. And I showed up at the youth hostel there. And after staying, exploring the island some, I got to know the manager of the hostel. And I should, for people who don't know what hostels are about, they are places that provide for affordable travel. They often have bunk rooms or they have some private rooms. They have common kitchens in common areas where people meet each other from different cultures, different parts of the world, different backgrounds, and together go out and explore. Often you share a meal with people at the end of the day and talk with them about what you saw in that place. So it's really a lot about community building, cross-cultural exchange, and understanding different people. So I was there, and maybe after a week or so, what he was called the house parent at the time, fed me a dinner and said, gee, Mark, you really seem like you like it here. Why don't you stay for a while? And so I did. I stayed for 6 years. I checked in, and I eventually became a staff member and then the manager of that hostel and on Martha's Vineyard, and then eventually a regional director, and then part of the national leadership team for American Youth Hostels, or now it's called Hosteling International. So that experience really shaped a lot of my interests, or reaffirmed, I guess, and built up interest around cross-cultural exchange, around community building, around connecting with people who are not quite the same as you, mm-hmm. and seeing how you can understand where they're coming from, get to know them, and who knows, you know, maybe do cool things together.
So this is interesting. I am amazed by the fact that you went someplace and wound up staying 6 years. You obviously have a very curious mind, but you also are comfortable with risk if you did that. Would that be a good summation or a good assessment?
Yeah, I think so. I think part of why I love travel so much is that element of risk and learning new things and being open to new things. So that aligns with, I think, what you're talking about. And it gives you that spirit of adventure. But I think through the path of travel, one of the things, at least I feel like I've learned over time and is in the book, we can come back to, is how do you start feeling at home wherever you are? Mm. And how do you build community, whether you're where you grew up or somewhere else in the country or somewhere else in the world? What does home look like and feel like? And how do you facilitate home for others? That's been an increasing interest for me over time, is how do, when people are maybe in a new area or meeting new people or a new environment, how do you help them feel at home? And what does home mean? Mm-hmm. That's part of what happened in that experience.
So the 6 years with Hostel, or American Hosteling with Hostel, how did that prepare you for next chapters in your life? Because I'm curious how that prepared you for the ivory tower of academia. So let's talk about that.
Sure. Well, so I didn't only run the youth hostel at that point. I was also doing some other things. I was working on a farm. I was volunteering at a chocolate shop. I was meeting a variety of people and gaining these different experiences. And it made me, I think, for the higher ed part, really interested about how do you build community? How are people become engaged citizens? How do people help become more aligned with who they are in the work that they do? And how do you teach about that? How do you build that? How do you foster that in other people? So I think that early experience in hosteling, where I was living it every day, you know, really trying to help people explore the world, explore themselves, and be aligned with mm-hmm. their aspirations, right? How do you align your actions with your values? It's a big thread in the book, right? So how do you do that? And that's a lot. When people are traveling, particularly on their own and seeing new places, it's very real. You know, it's there. You find that they can show up, be present, and connect. It's magical when you're in that strong connection. So experiencing that firsthand for years. Maybe curious about how can you keep doing that throughout life, and how can we help cultivate that in others, whether you're going in college or learning in other ways.
I love that you talked about being present. One of the things that I have noticed and noticed more of is how many people are absent presences in their own lives, that they are so distracted that they're not even aware of how they're living their lives. They haven't spent the time thinking about core values. They haven't spent the time thinking about alignment. And then before you know it, all these years go by and you may not have done anything that really fed your heart. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. I'm curious about your interests beyond work, because having volunteered in a chocolate factory, I didn't know that about you. That wasn't in your bio. Having done that, having worked on a farm, what are your interests beyond work? What are the things that you use your life's energy for?
Well, I mentioned travel, right? Mm-hmm. So I definitely have this ongoing lifelong interest in travel, and I've tried to weave that into work over time. And I do love to hear people's stories. I mean, just like I think you are finding, sharing stories through your work, Joanne, it's something I have a similar fascination. And so anytime I get a chance to learn about different lifestyles or different cultures through travel or just through, you know, those early experiences on the farm and the chocolate shop, frankly, opened up areas of great personal interest for me. So the chocolate shop was a place where people with different sorts of abilities worked side by side and cared a lot about each other. And it was never about the chocolate. It was about the community, and there was amazing chocolate, I should be clear.
It
was awesome chocolate, but it was even a more awesome community. And the two women who ran that shop for many years, one was a nutritionist, one was, I think, an occupational therapist. They cared about the community, but they knew they had to make good chocolate. And but they had clarity. So I loved that experience. I was a specialist in dipping caramels, by the way. I was slow, but I was able to do that.
I dipped.
And on the farm, I mean, that was another great experience of learning a world that was different than what I grew up with, and learning about where people's skills are and where they're not, how people treat each other. So I'm not sure this totally answers your question, but I love hearing different stories, people really different from myself, experiencing some of that and seeing if I can make sense of it, you know. But, and I think all of those things, you can be really present, because when you're experiencing new things and you're really listening to other people, you show up. You got to show up. Mm-hmm. Or why are you doing it?
Right. Yeah. If you don't want to make the connection, why are you there? Why are you there? Right. So thinking about your career and this second chapter that you had in academia, how would you characterize it? What were some of the gifts or the lessons that you got from your time in academia?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty untraditional. Is that untraditional, non-traditional? It wasn't the regular route. I did teach some in a college of business, but really my first role was around community engagement. And that ended up being my path. So it was straddling campus and community. So it was helping make connections between the university and the community, helping sort of be a front door for people in the community on how to access university resources, doing things in the community like around workforce development, around some diversity work, around leadership work, and just nonprofit development, all of those things. I would work a lot with the community, either leading sessions or helping to evaluate projects or be supportive and help them find a way to leverage the resources of the university. I taught a little bit at the beginning, more around civic engagement and community-based learning and helping students get out of the classroom, go into the field and make sense of it. So that's where I started. And that's really was the past throughout. I continued on, usually as the person who was the point person and eventually the face of a university in the community to help the community connect, and then creating programs that were out of the mainstream, so that weren't traditional classrooms, but they were programs about either I created them or supported them, social enterprise programs, for example, and helping nonprofits around building up, balancing their mission and margin, or programs around supporting an African American leadership program, or public leadership and public safety, or literacy programs, all those things that are connected to education and personal and professional development, but may not be taught in the regular classroom. And then I did teach some too in org leadership and nonprofit development and civic engagement. So is that making sense? It's not a...
No, I love it because it's tapestried. I love it because it's varied. So that appeals to me. Biggest gift or biggest lesson that you learned during that phase of your life, during your time in academia?
I would say the importance of getting over yourself when you're trying to lead. Mm-hmm. So in working in larger systems and working with organizations, if it's all about you and your ego, it may not do you justice and get you where you want to go or treat other people the way you want to treat them. If you can see how to work with others, lift them up, and figure out ways to help them connect, that could be the most powerful influence and leadership that you can have, or at least that I could have. Mm-hmm. And so while it may have at different points felt like, oh, I have this position, it seems like it has a lot of influence. If I could leverage that position to not be about me and be about the communities and trying to grow, then that made the biggest difference. So that I was reminded of that sort of again and again throughout my career.
How do you pass that gift on or share it with, you know, the generation that's coming after us? How do you help people to understand? And you know what? Not even just the generation that's coming after us. How do you share that gift with people, with leaders, with people who want to be leaders?
I think it's to really often challenge people who are in leadership positions to try to understand what are they doing? What are they trying to achieve? What's their role in it? And is it, are they focused on the mission? Are they focused on the values? Are their actions aligned with their values as opposed to consumed with themselves? And so I think being really straightforward about that, I've had a ton of conversations over the years with leaders of different organizations about, do they feel like they're showing up in the way they want to show up, and are they achieving what they want and not overly focused on themselves or their own next step?
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. I think that having those conversations that help people to build their own self-awareness makes such a big difference, and it can have lasting impact in their lives and in their organizations. It's not just about their lives, but in their organizations. So did you ever think that you'd be doing something other than teaching, writing, and contributing to the Academy? Did you think there was going to be another chapter?
Not for the first bunch of years. I thought that's where I would stay, you know, so I ended up being in higher ed for 15, 16 years. So I think for the first 10 years, or at least, I kept having different positions. I didn't know what was coming next and had interesting positions. So I wasn't thinking about it then. But I think at some point, you know, in the last 2 or 3 years, I felt like, well, what might be next? And I started thinking about, is there a way I can start practicing what I've been preaching and teaching these last bunch of years, and to challenge myself to do more of what sort of talking about in higher ed and practice it in the community? So I didn't have a specific next thing that I wanted to go to, and this opportunity came up somewhat serendipitously. But I think that's it was when the opportunity came up, I think I was open to it. And it was a good example of a nonprofit organization and a social enterprise that I had been teaching about and supporting other people who were in the role, kind of roles that I'm in now. And it just seemed like a neat opportunity to return to it.
Nice fit for you.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, did you have mentors who helped you be open to writing a new chapter, who helped you be open to risk, who helped build your intellectual curiosity?
Sure. Yeah. So earlier on, like in college, one mentor that stood out was a Unitarian minister who came back to school himself in his think he was in his 50s or something. And Rudy was somebody who was incredibly curious and always asked a ton of questions. And I learned from him that like voracious appetite for being curious. Finally, I learned from Rudy that the only way I could get him not to ask me another question was to finish my answer with a question for him. It was the only way I could reverse it. So he was open to a lot of new stuff and he had incredible curiosity. And it was changing some aspect of his career. Another mentor, Steve, was an extraordinary storyteller. He had been an Outward Bound instructor for many years out on a river and learning the stories of rivers and helping people explore that. And then he moved into higher ed and he took those stories and helped other people not only learn how to tell stories, but how to incorporate what was going on around in their lives and in their worlds into their thinking and doing. So he was a mentor who changed lives. And then I also have family members who changed paths at different times in different ways. I had one more example. It's my great aunt Pearl, who was in her one of the matriarchs of our family and lived in Brooklyn, New York for much of her life. And then I'm not sure, it was somewhere, I think in her 70s or so, she always wanted to be an uptown girl. And when the opportunity presented herself, she moved up on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, which was an incredible big deal. I mean, she lived in the same home for decades. And then when things changed in the family, she was able to move uptown. So I think that's another good example of someone who was able to make a next chapter for herself.
I love that. You know, the song Uptown Girl is ringing in my head now.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give somebody who has a little bit of maybe trepidation, but some interest and maybe some apprehension about writing the next chapter of themselves and of their lives?
I think part of it is being open to that change, and people approach change in lots of different ways. So how do people, for me, I need to sit with it a little bit. I need to do enough research, but not do enough sort of due diligence in the next step to be prepared for it. But then at some point, willing to take that risk, willing to take the leap, and that, that openness. And I think for me, if you can practice it in some way, like in smaller ways to yes. change some behavior, change some habits, it's really hard not to let inertia be your driver, right? Mm-hmm. And so it takes energy, as most people know. It takes a ton of energy to change a habit or to change direction, take some guts, and you got to be ready for it to have a little courage to make that leap. So, and then others, for each person, the due diligence, the amount of research they do before to help it feel like, hey, this is a good decision. I'm not just jumping ship and doing it because I don't like what I'm doing now. Hopefully you're really going to something as opposed to running away from something else. So for me, each time I think I've been really excited about making the change. So change from into higher ed or into nonprofit leadership, like I didn't do it to run away. I did it because this sounded pretty cool and I want to give it a shot. Hey, I talking about it. So let's see if I can step up and do it. It's appealing to me.
I love that perspective that you just shared, not running from, but going to. I love that perspective because I think it can make all of the difference in the world in the approach, in whether you approach it with genuine curiosity, with wanting something different. So thank you for sharing that. I would love for you to return and tell us a little bit more about your story. I want to know about the exploration process. I want to know about that aunt who became an uptown girl. And I want to know about how you got ready for these new waters. Are you open to coming back?
Sounds great. Glad to.
I very much want my listeners to read Your Life is Your Message. Mark and Nancy Stanford Blair do a masterful job of making transformational leadership meaningful, and of taking every reader deeper into the self. So I like the fact that you take theory to practice, and I hope that you will come back. And thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Glad for the conversation.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you got tools that you'll actually use and share. Subscribe if you haven't already. I add new and relevant leadership learning all of the time. If you haven't visited the Smichel Speaks YouTube channel, check it out. There's all sorts of new content. All of this is virtual leadership learning that will help you soar.